We all remember a favourite teacher, don't we? We remember our less favourite teachers too. Teachers could say the same of students and their parents, for that matter. Amidst all the political argy-bargy over teacher standards, performance pay, and whether principals should have more autonomy to hire and fire teachers, I want you to meet one teacher who has a lot to say, actor and playwright Ned Manning. Spent years in the classroom, in country schools, in a range of inner city schools, I imagine. It's where he delivered some of his most memorable performances to the toughest of audience, high school students. Playground Duty is his new memoir of teaching. It's moving, it's laugh out loud funny, it's pointed, but overall it's an optimistic ode to teaching and teachers. Welcome to Life Matters, Ned.
Thank you, Natasha. Great to be here.
What really struck me about this memoir was the immense privilege you felt in being a teacher, and particularly, this really struck me, that you were seeing kids as even their parents don't get to see them.
Yeah, I mean, that really was the motivation for writing the book in the first place, I think. As you said, I've taught in all sorts of guises, and I was coming to the end of a long period at Newtown Performing Arts High School, and I thought, I just kind of felt like I wanted to leave teaching, and particularly that job at that place, with something. And I was trying to think, I took kids to China as the final sort of my final act, a bunch of kids performing around China.
Brave man.
And it was such a wonderful thing, and the word privilege is a very good one, because I think you see kids and you form relationships that in a way that probably nobody else ever does. You see them at their most vulnerable, or human beings at their most vulnerable, which is in the teenage years. And they share things with you inadvertently often, but that you're privileged to share and to honour that privilege, actually.
And things that parents don't get to see either. In fact, there's a great scene in this where you're sort of describing the parent-teacher interviews where the student is, you know, slumped and maudlin.
Yeah.
But you and yet you don't you had no sense of that person in your classroom being like
Parent-teacher nights were, a lot of teachers dreaded them. I used to love them because I used to always wonder what are the parents going to be like. And one case in particular stands out in my memory of a girl who was an absolute gem of, in fact, she's now become a teacher. And she was a gem of a child. Always, you know, was always, had everything finished, all done. And her mother's opening gambit was, how do you put up with her? And I kind of went, I looked and I thought, you have got a goddess as a daughter, and you asked me that question. And it was such an insight. I won't say her name, but the girl, she sort of rolled her eyes and I kind of, but I, you know, a couple of times I was having parent-teacher interviews and I kind of teared up because I was so proud of the kids, and the parents are kind of looking at me going, oh God, what have they got? And the other times you'd have, and this did happen a few times, where the parent had had a few beers at the pub before they turned up, or worse, and you're sitting there talking to this parent whose eyes are sort of rolling around in their head, and you're kind of going, my God, how does this kid survive? And you can see they were there, and the kid is mortified because here's this, you know, and this is a true story. I mean, it happened more than once where the parent's breathing alcohol all over you, and this is at 6 o'clock at night. And you think they could sort of hold off for the parent-teacher interview, and the kid is ashamed. And then you think that kid, how that kid has managed to do such incredible work in class and be such a great
despite
person.
Despite the context of what was at home.
Yeah.
You were hung, drawn and quartered in some of those early experiences of standing in front of a classroom. I mean, back in the days where you landed in Tenterfield in the 1970s.
Yep.
And yet you found it all so addictive. What is that addiction?
Look, I don't really know. I was exposed, but the only way I could put it, all my vulnerabilities were laid out to bear, and there were times, and there's no exaggeration, when I'd go home and cuddle up in bed at 3:40 in the afternoon, have a good cry, wondering what I'd done to myself. It was really, really tough. By nature, I don't like giving up. Like most actors, you just keep going. So there's that. And I think it was that just you could see the change that you can affect on kids if you're interested in them. And I like people. And I think that's the bottom line for a teacher is you have to like people, and I'm really fascinated by human beings. And so, you know, Tenterfield, it was an incredible challenge, but it was magic what occurred after being there for 3 years.
This is in regional New South Wales, and I mean, in those early days, you were standing alongside kids at the local pub, at the bar. Suddenly they looked familiar, and they're from the school that you just landed at. I mean, this was a very challenging role for you, but I wondered whether it allowed you to be more creative working in that sort of setting.
Well, I certainly, yeah, I think I did become that. I think as I say in the book, I mean, a lot of those kids that you're referring to taught me a lot about myself. I was a typical early 20s, 22-year-old, thought I knew everything, was arrogant and all that sort of thing. They certainly brought me back to earth. I was a bit of a smartass, and they knocked that out of me as well. I learnt very quickly to be honest and to be open and to be fair. And once you sort of survive, once you prove to them that you were there for them, then you could get things done. And I was creative in the sense that, I mean, I've always loved drama, and that was the, I used to take the kids across to the park, and we'd do these drama classes, running around doing Jabberwocky and flowing skirts and stuff. And I think the local townsfolk were a bit worried about what I was up to. But that was a way of getting through to them, and it's interesting because I've got lifelong friends from those times. And it was a fantastic experience. But I was also lucky that a number of the other teachers I was with when I started in Tenterfield, we all kind of decided to stay and to see what we... I mean, we didn't talk about it. We just sort of did it organically. And we created... We created sporting teams, and we did plays, and we did all sorts of stuff. Because the choice was either to drink yourself to death or do all those sort of things outside school hours, because there was nothing else to do.
Well, that experience at Tenterfield is actually very illustrative, I think, because you write, key to survival was to throw ourselves into school life, whatever the cost. And it seems that it's all those extra things that you did, that popular teachers do, that I guess aren't quantifiable, like coaching the football team, like teachers and students pairing together on a water polo team, putting on plays. It's all those things that really build relationships, demanding though it is.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's great about teaching in a country town or in a small town is that you do get to know the kids and their parents. And I mean, the boundaries were crossed and muddied very, very, very often because, I mean, for instance, what you said about water polo, I remember the maths master was caning a kid, and those are the days they had canes, in the afternoon, and that night was playing water polo with him in the same team. So, you know, you do tend to see people in a different light when that's the case, and you do form different relationships. And I think that I found actually at Newtown, when I was doing plays with kids, and we had to do plays all the time with them, when you saw them on the weekend, you started to forge relationships that were quite different to what you had in the classroom.
There are boundaries there, though, aren't there? And that's always a challenge for a fledgling teacher.
Well, yeah.
Because you get tested.
You certainly do, and I had no idea about any of that. I was very young. I mean, I was 22, but I was a very young 22. Very inexperienced in the ways of the world, and I was never warned. I was never told about the sort of things that could happen, that did, and you had to learn on the go, and it was very challenging, actually.
Why?
Well, because I think it was interesting. I was thinking about this yesterday, that when I went back, I taught for about 6 years or 8 years to start with, and then I resigned and became an actor. And when I went back into teaching 15 years later, it was much easier because I was much older, and I was no way I was a peer of the students. I was distanced by age, which actually gave me much greater freedom, and I think a much greater trust, and I think I was a much better teacher. I think I was much more able to see what my role was and to understand it. And I think when I started, I didn't. And I think it's very, very hard for young teachers. And I mean, they talk about this performance, all this sort of stuff they carry on about. And you kind of go, well, you know, the hardest thing for a young person to do going out teaching is standing in front of people who are 3 or 4 years younger than them and try to be a teacher rather than a peer.
Very challenging indeed. Ned Manning is my guest on Life Matters this morning. He's written a terrific memoir, if you like, called Playground Duty, of his years as a teacher. He's, of course, also an actor and a playwright. Ned, Naplin and the like have got you rather hot under the collar.
Yeah.
You argue you simply can't measure good teaching. And well, to some, that will sound like a cop-out, Ned.
Well, yes. I mean, the thing is that you put a square peg, it won't fit in a round hole. That's the thing. And if you talk about, for instance, NAPLAN testing, and it's all very well, and we know that certain schools coach people for NAPLAN. We know that, I mean, I've got a son who's in year three. When he does his NAPLAN test, he's going to be looking out the window wondering about what he's going to be doing after school. I mean, he doesn't understand at the age of nine what that's about. And I mean, some kids will, some won't. If they're coached, they will. It doesn't necessarily tell you a lot about the students, and definitely doesn't tell you a lot about the school. But it is an absolute fact that some schools do coach kids for NAPLAN testing. They're not meant to, but they do.
Why doesn't it tell you a lot about the students? Because certainly it's one measure of what the students are or aren't capable of, and measurement means that we can make changes.
Well, to a point, yes. But how do you measure what a school has achieved? I mean, it's very easy at a selective high school to measure the results, the mathematical results of science and even the English results. But in schools in disadvantaged areas, it's much harder to measure things. I mean, you can measure literacy in a certain way and you can measure numeracy. But can you measure how does a person feel about themselves? And can you measure how a teacher who actually takes an interest in a concern, has a concern for a kid who's struggling, changes that kid's life? And I mean, to compare the results of in a NAPLAN or any other test from a school, from an independent school or a school that's got a selective school, their results with a school from a disadvantaged area is absurd. I mean, of course you need to measure how a school's going and whether our literacy standards are up to where they should be and so on. But if you make the comparison, as they have done, to schools where in cultures where there's a discipline, there's 45 kids sitting in the classroom, they're all set up straight, no one questions anything. They do as they're told, they get very good results in maths and so on, to a school in some of our suburbs where kids are coming in late, where they've got huge problems at home, they might have drug and alcohol problems they're dealing with their parents, and you try and say, well, those kids aren't doing very well, therefore we've got to have better teachers, whatever that might mean, I don't think that works.
Well, on the question of better teachers, you've felt considerably aggrieved, and we should point out you've taught in all sorts of different settings, the Newtown Performing Arts High School, in Tenterfield, in Gunnedah, at the Eora Centre for Aboriginal Visual and Performing Arts in Redfern, in Sydney. So a multitude of teaching contexts. But you feel aggrieved by the public conversation about teachers. Why?
Well, I can't believe it, to be honest. I mean, I heard it again on Q&A. We want quality teachers. I mean, what the hell is that? I mean, what is a quality teacher? A quality teacher has got a really good UAI. Is that right? The number of teachers I've seen, young teachers, come into schools who've got really good degrees and are very academically, have great academic expertise, who then struggle in the classroom, who struggle in the playground, innumerable, and then resign at the end of year one, is innumerable. And the number of teachers who might on the outside appear to be not that the sharpest knife in the drawer, but who are fantastic at relating to kids and caring about kids, who go unsung, and there are thousands of them out there, and they teach things like sport, and they teach things like what the old manual arts used to be, whatever it is, HISI, and they teach all sorts of subjects. And these are people who understand and care about kids, and I don't know how you measure that. And a quality teacher, so we're going to make it harder to get into teaching courses. We're going to make the teaching courses more accountable. So we're going to make more accountability. But does anyone actually sit in there when there's a teacher standing in front of 25 kids who looks over and sees this little girl, obviously distressed, who walks over and goes, "Are you okay?" or just says something like, "That's a good essay," or whatever it happens to be, and that kid suddenly lights up? No one ever is going to see that.
How do you measure
that? That's what teachers do. And I mean, fundamentally, the fundamental thing for those things to work and make conditions such that, one, it will attract people to teaching who want to teach, who are interested in people, because it's not even necessarily just about the money. It's about people who teach, as I said before and keep saying, are people who really care about people. And that's what makes a teacher.
Ned Manning, as a final question, what do you fundamentally think young teachers leaving the DIP Ed programs need today in Australia?
They need experience in the classroom. I mean, you cannot beat experience. You cannot beat the sort of experience. I mean, this, another reason I wrote the book is the experience I got in Tenterfield. My first year in Tenterfield, I was destroyed by it, and I was inadequate. I mean, to be frank, I was pretty hopeless. And it's an experience that you can only learn from standing in front of 25 to 30 kids and learning to negotiate and learning how you can be yourself in front of them and learning how you can encourage them. And that no amount of reading books or doing academic tests will teach you that. It's a fundamental thing. How do you, in the playground, see that a kid is struggling and go and play handball with them? I mean, who teaches somebody to do that? You learn that instinctively, and that's what it's about, I think.
We've barely touched on what is a rollicking ride in playground duty. I highly recommend the book, actually. I think a lot of parents, in fact, students and definitely teachers will relate to some of the stories you share. Thank you for sharing your opinions on the program this morning, Ned.
Thanks so much, Natasha.
Actor, playwright and teacher Ned Manning there. His new book is Playground Duty. I think you'll enjoy this one. It's published by New South Books. It's the teaching experience. I wonder if you've had a favourite teacher. Were they rather like Ned? Creative and courageous and lateral. We like that in a classroom, don't we? They're often the most memorable teachers of all. Coming up, we're heading to the chemist